The following is a DW Old Testament production. January 589 BC. King Nebuchadnezzar II begins his long siege of Jerusalem under the reign of Zedekiah. The Babylonian king is tired of dealing with the constant rebellion of this small state and looks to punish them one last time. Lacking moral courage to be king, Zedekiah, in the end, will fail to act. The Babylonian army will breach the city wall, destroy Solomon's temple, carry off its people, and burn the city to the ground. These events will begin the Babylonian captivity. Join us as we take you back to where it all began, a story involving the numerous books of the Old Testament. From the dawn of creation to the end of the Maccabeans in 63 BC, while focusing on the biblical writings, the ancient Hebrews, the temple, the traditions, and the history of God's chosen people. The topics of this episode include Israel's sacred history, the Old Testament, the chronology, and the geography. Israel's sacred history. The most distinctive feature of the Jewish people is their sense of history. Judaism is the religion of a people who have a unique memory that reaches back through the centuries to the stirring events of the Bible, events that formed them as a people with a sense of identity and vocation. Whenever the Passover is celebrated, whenever the law is read in the synagogue, whenever a parent instructs his child in the tradition, this memory is kept alive. When a people seeks to understand the meaning of their life story, they do not actually begin with their birth or infancy, even though their written autobiography may start at that point. Rather, they view or review their early childhood in the light of later experiences that are impressed deeply on their memory. Israel's life story did not really begin with the time of Abraham or even the creation, although the Old Testament, in its present form, starts there. Rather, Israel's history had its beginning in a crucial historical experience that made it a self-conscious historical community, an event so decisive that earlier events and subsequent experiences were seen in its light. This decisive event was the Exodus from Egypt. Down through the ages, Israelites have reenacted this historic moment when God, whom they called Yahweh, marvelously brought his people out of bondage and into the land of milk and honey. Just as the Christian remembers and relives the sacrifice of Jesus and the celebration of the Lord's Supper, so those of the Jewish faith recall and make contemporary the Exodus as they celebrate the Passover. From a secular viewpoint, the study of Israel is similar to the stories of other small nations that were caught in the whirlpool of power politics in the ancient world. In a sense, Israel's history is a minor sidestep in the larger history of the ancient Near East, and the culture is overshadowed by the more power cultures of antiquity. However, Israel's religious history, which is sacred to both Jews and Christians, set it apart from anything else. For in these historical experiences, as interpreted by faith, the ultimate meaning of human life is disclosed. The Old Testament is Israel's witness to its encounter with God. To fully understand biblical Israel, you have to fully understand the Old Testament. And to fully understand the Old Testament, you have to understand the Passover. It's the whole point of the historical drama, the very heart of the people and their faith. Quoting Psalm 103:7. He made known his ways to Moses, his acts to the people of Israel. The Old Testament. It should first be stressed that the distinction between the scriptures of the Old Testament and the New Testament is a Christian one, based on a passage from the prophet Jeremiah. For the Jews, there is only one testament, called the Covenant. Today, the Jewish people refer to their scriptures as Tanakh, a word made up of the initial consonants of the three major divisions of the Hebrew Bible: the Law, the Torah, the Prophets, Nevi'im, and Writings, Ketuvim. This simple division of law, prophets, and writings can be confusing, however, since the Jewish canon groups the books of Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings with the prophets, even though they recount the historical deeds of the conquest of Palestine and the reign of Israel's kings. The Old Testament is either 39 books in Protestant and Jewish editions, or 46 in Catholic editions. The Christians divide the Old Testament into four divisions by adding a category for the historical books separate from the prophets. Its four divisions are the Pentateuch, which is Greek for five books, the historical books, the wisdom writings, and the prophets. The Pentateuch and the Jewish Torah both signify the same group. The first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. These books were traditionally given by Moses himself and, from the Jewish understanding, formed the most sacred center of Scripture, with the prophets and writings only offering further commentary and reflection upon it. We will explore each book in detail throughout this series, but let's first look at a brief survey of the total picture of the Old Testament. The Old Testament fittingly begins with the five books of the Pentateuch. Genesis describes a prehistory of God's call and preparation of a people from the creation to the times of the patriarchs. Exodus portrays the mighty deeds of the deliverance of Israel from Egypt and the giving of the covenant. Leviticus describes obligations of that covenant, while Numbers adds more laws and continues the story of Israel's time in the desert. Deuteronomy, written as a speech of Moses, serves to deepen and sum up the meaning of the covenant for Israel later in its history. The historical books explore the Israelites living out the covenant in the promised land of Palestine. Joshua describes its conquest, Judges the settlement and struggle for survival, 1 and 2 Samuel the growing need for and coming of its kings in Saul and David, 1 and 2 Kings traces the history of religious fidelity in the kings that followed David down to the end of the monarchy in about 586 BC. Since all six of these books have a style and message similar to Deuteronomic history, they teach one consistent message that points out Israel's infidelity to the covenant and warns of coming destruction. In Jewish tradition, these same six books are called the former prophets, because they have a strong prophetic tone of moral judgment. Many of the lessons are put into the mouths of various prophets. After the destruction and exile of 586 BC, 1 and 2 Chronicles again looked at Israel's history from the perspective of a priestly writer, and its account is carried forward to the end of the 5th century BC in the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. This later period after the exile also observes many smaller works. Ruth tells the story of a faithful Israelite woman from the time of the Judges. Esther tells of a faithful Jewish queen in the Persian court of the 5th century BC. Judith relates how a heroine at the time of the exile saved her people. Tobit describes a faithful Israelite from among the people exiled in 722 BC to Assyria. All of these are moralistic tales emphasizing the best qualities of Jewish piety and are entertaining. They help to communicate a sense of Jewish pride after the exilic period. The original incidents may have been based on historical persons or deeds, but these were long forgotten and/or are past our ability to recover them. Thus, they are called edifying tales. Finally, the post-exilic period is brought to a close by the two books of Maccabees, which tell the story of the Jewish revolt for independence against the Greek government of Syria in 168-164 BC. The next section, the Writings, contains many profound and beautiful examples of Israelite reflections on faith. The Book of Psalms gives us prayers and hymns. Proverbs, Koheleth, Sirach, and the Wisdom of Solomon offer the statements and insights of the wise men. The Song of Songs is a series of love poems treasured as an analogy of God's love for His bride Israel. The prophetic books are divided into two parts by our modern Bibles, the major prophets and the minor prophets. The main reason for the division is size. The major prophets are all long books, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. Daniel is included here, but strictly speaking, it belongs with the writings as an inspirational work. The minor prophets are called the 12 in the Jewish canon, probably because they were all copied down one after another on the same scroll in order to save space. These prophets range from Amos, the first prophet in the 8th century, down to Joel and Malachi in the 5th or 4th century BC. This, then, is the Old Testament. It spans a great sweep of time from perhaps 2000 BC down to the century before Christ. But in noting this large span of time, we must be aware of thinking that the books in the Old Testament are in chronological order. They are not. Written at many different times, they are found mixed throughout the Bible. As a result, we must treat the actual chronology separately and explore the corresponding books that relate to that time period separately from how they fall in biblical order. We will do so in this lecture series. So, what is the chronology of biblical Israel? The chronology. The first great historical period of the Old Testament was that of the patriarchs of Israel: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and his brothers. The time was within the Middle Bronze Age, about 2000 to 1500 BC, when most men relied on tools and weapons of copper and bronze. Iron was known, but rare. The secret of the smelting process was carefully hidden by the peoples, like the Hittites, who knew it. The great cities and civilizations of Egypt and Mesopotamia were already old, but the Hebrews, like many wandering groups, lived only on their fringes. These first Hebrews were sturdy, tent-dwelling, and unused to the cities. They were most likely illiterate, as were most people of that time. Their lives centered around their immediate families of tribes rather than a city or nation. Their everyday work was mostly with the flocks of sheep they owned and tended, as these were their main wealth and source of food, fuel, and cloth for garments and tents. These people were monotheistic, worshiping Yahweh exclusively, their relationship to Him expressed in a covenant or agreement. This covenant guaranteed Yahweh's protection and guidance in return for obedience and exclusive loyalty. According to the book of Genesis, it was during this time that God first promised the Hebrews a land of their own. In time, the tribes of Israel became slaves to the Egyptians. Around the 13th century BC, Moses became a prophet of God and rescued them through the details in the book of Exodus, thus establishing the Passover. With that great escape, they traveled through the desert until they reached Mount Sinai, where God provided Moses with the commandments and laws in which to mold the tribes into a confederation dedicated to their religion. The next period of the Old Testament, from about 1200 to 1020 BC, observed the conquest and settlement of the promised land of Canaan under Joshua and the Judges. This was the times of the heroes who, the Bible says, were chosen by God to save Israel from the many enemies that surrounded it. After the conquest of Canaan's central hills by Joshua, the semi-nomadic Hebrews learned to grow crops and settle in towns. They also faced the challenge and temptation of foreign gods. The period of Joshua witnessed battles and massacres in the name of Yahweh. To the Israelites, this bloodshed was justified by a belief in divine purpose and righteousness, even though Israel recognized evil within itself. The loose confederation of tribes that formed Israel eventually proved inadequate to defend itself against the powerful Philistines, and the people were soon asking for a king. It was the great prophet and judge Samuel who anointed Israel's first king, Saul. The Age of Kings, from about 1020 to 922 BC, is probably the best-known part of the Old Testament. This was when the nation of Israel reached the zenith of its ancient splendor through the kings Saul, David, and Solomon. This was the time in which later Israelites looked back upon as the Golden Age. Under Saul, Israel finally began to defend itself effectively against the Philistines and other enemies, but it was under David that Israel became a true kingdom. Aided by the decline of Egyptian and Mesopotamian power, David expanded Israel's land by conquest and treaty until it reached from Syria to Egypt. During his reign, the Philistine monopoly of iron smelting and smithing was broken, and the city of Jerusalem was captured from the Canaanites and made the capital of Israel. David's personality and brilliant leadership made him Israel's greatest king. Solomon, David's son, was the first hereditary king of Israel. Under his rule, Israel became the most prosperous kingdom in the Near East. Not a warrior like his father, Solomon was a businessman and diplomat. He strengthened his entire empire through marriages and treaties. He constructed the first temple in Jerusalem, which became the spiritual center of Israel. But Solomon would not be as popular or as successful as his father. The country could not support his lavish expenditures nor his large court. There was popular resentment of the taxes he levied and conservative religious anger at his tolerance of foreign religious cults in Jerusalem. This strain and discontent, together with the long-standing rivalry between the tribes of northern and southern Israel, brought about the division of Solomon's kingdom after his death. For the next 300 years, from 922 to 587 BC, the two Hebrew kingdoms, Judah in the south and Israel in the north, fought to maintain their independence against the reviving might of Egypt, Assyria, and Babylon. A series of great prophets, Elijah, Elisha, Isaiah, and Jeremiah, warned the Israelites that these enemies would punish them for their lack of faith and attraction to foreign gods. Their warnings were in vain, for Israel and then Judah fell to the foreign invaders. Jerusalem itself was left a desolate ruin, the first temple destroyed. It was during their exile in Babylonia, during the 6th century BC, that the Jews learned to preserve their faith by studying the scriptures and discussing them in local meetings called synagogues. The prophet Ezekiel was instrumental in this development. By his writings and actions, he vividly reminded his fellow exiles of their religious heritage and instilled in them a hope for a future return to the promised land. This return was actually made possible by the enlightened policy of the Persians, who had succeeded the Assyrians and Babylonians as the Israelites' captors. The Persians were the first great nation known to have granted religious freedom and considerable self-government to subject peoples. Men like Ezra and Nehemiah were sent back to Judah, where they furnished exceptional leadership in critical times. The temple was rebuilt, and a new Jewish nation began to rise on the ruins of the old one. The Babylonian exile influenced the Jews deeply. Many became absorbed in life while in Babylon and chose to remain away from Israel. These first Jews of the dispersion became the founders of the worldwide colonies that have flourished ever since. Worshipping God in their foreign towns and cities, they nevertheless continued to look to Jerusalem as the center of their own faith. But soon began the first waves of religious persecutions that were to plague the Jews throughout their existence. The story of Esther, set in Persia, is a popular account of a rescue from that kind of persecution. By the time of the great Judas Maccabeus, around 160 BC, the Hellenistic civilization, brought to the Near East by Alexander the Great in 330 BC, threatened to absorb and extinguish Jewish religious culture. The heroism and leadership of Judas, his father and brothers, succeeded in freeing Israel from foreign rule. The Maccabees themselves then established a dynasty of priest kings who ruled from Jerusalem until the Romans conquered Palestine in 63 BC. Though the history of the Old Testament ends with the Maccabees, the world of the Old Testament really died in 70 AD when the Roman army under Titus sacked Jerusalem, destroyed its temple, and killed or dispersed its Jewish citizens. Titus celebrated the event by erecting a triumphal arch in Rome. A relief sculpture on the arch shows Roman soldiers carrying away the sacred candelabrum of the temple as a prize of war. He also issued a commemorative coin which bore the words Judea Capta, Judea Captured. The coin shows the figures of a standing man and weeping woman beneath a palm tree. Today the arch and coin are all that remain of Emperor Titus's triumph. The faith of the city he destroyed continues through the many millions of followers throughout the world. The history of that faith and the people who lived it is the story of the Old Testament. The geography. With any civilization, we must first begin with an overview of the terrain, as the environment played vital roles in how each culture developed. Unlike Egypt, Palestine had little natural protection since it was only a narrow strip of settled territory along the seacoast. It formed a natural highway for merchants, visitors, and invaders moving between the great city-states in Egypt and Mesopotamia. Being mountainous for the most part, it could only support a modest population and could not compete with the massive armies of Mesopotamia and Egypt. However, being an international crossroad, this most likely contributed to the high literary culture found in the Old Testament. Biblical authors seem to have known well the beliefs and writings of other nations. The natural geography of Palestine divides the land into a series of long north-south zones with very easy means of getting across the country from west to east. The four major zones are the coastal plain, with sandy or marshy soil, which stretches from the narrow belt in the north to broad areas in the south. The hill country, or Shephelah, a series of low hills and valleys up from the coastal plain, often good for sheep herding and orchards, and well settled in ancient times. The central mountain range, which runs like a spine down the eastern part of the country, often reaching 2,000 feet in height and sparsely settled in early times. Jerusalem sits on this range. And the Jordan Valley, which is the lowest area on earth and stretches down the whole eastern border. It is broken twice by water, the Lake of Galilee in the north and the Dead Sea in the middle. Just to give you some perspective, the Sea of Galilee is 684 feet below sea level, and the Dead Sea is an amazing 1,290 feet below sea level. These two lakes are connected by the Jordan River, which takes 200 miles to go the 60 miles between them as it wanders in loops. Below the Dead Sea, no river flows, but the valley continues for another 185 miles to the Red Sea. This area is called the Aruba. These north-south zones are broken only by the Esdraelon Valley, stretching across the middle of the country just above Mount Carmel. It's the most fertile farming land, which was heavily populated at all times. Mount Carmel itself sticks out into the Mediterranean Sea, breaking the easy journey up the coastal plain and forcing travelers to pass through near Megiddo. This narrow pass became the center of many battles and has become popularly known as Armageddon. The land can also be divided by four major regions that stretch across its length from east to west. The first is Galilee. This is a mountainous region north of the Esdraelon Valley that gives up to the high mountains of Lebanon. Samaria. This is the middle of the country, and its hilly nature is bordered on the north by the Esdraelon Valley. It formed the heart of the northern kingdom after the time of Solomon. Judah. This is a mixture of the high mountains and dry wilderness area to the east, but on its west is rolling hills and wide plains that produced much of the fruits and vegetables of the land. And finally, the Negev. This is a desert area stretching across the whole southern part of the land and making up more than half of the total area of Palestine. It gradually becomes the Sinai Desert, dividing Palestine from Egypt. Few settlements were made in the Negev. We'll explore each of these areas in more detail as we study the history of biblical Israel. In the next episode, we'll begin at the beginning with the book of Genesis and the detailed study of the first five books of the Old Testament. Thank you for joining us.